Well, it's time for some cannabis science, and this is going to be the final cannabis science of 2008. It's a New Year's Eve, and we're joined again by Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be on.
I'm not going to talk to you again until 2009.
Hard to believe.
I know. It's amazing. We've come to the end of the year here. And as I was putting some posts together for this week's Daily Audio Stash, I found one that I thought would be the perfect one to run by you because this is a post that came off of CNN from their health website or part of their website dealing with health, I imagine. And it's a daily question that people can ask of a doctor there on CNN, I guess, and they can get, you know, health responses here. And this was the question for today that was asked by a person named Pat in Kansas. And the title of it here was, "Will daily pot usage hurt my health?" And he continues to ask, "I don't smoke cigarettes or drink alcohol, but I have smoked marijuana daily for the last 25 years. Although I've enjoyed good health all my life, I would like to know what concerns I should have with long-term marijuana usage." And since you've done a lot of the studies on this, I thought we would get your opinions. For someone who is close to a daily cannabis user, what kind of long-term health effects should they be looking at?
Well, it's interesting because the primary negative consequence we have, of course, is the legal one. So if you're buying large amounts and getting high every single day, the thing to watch out for, of course, is who is your dealer, what kind of quantities do you buy in, and what would the legal consequences be if you did happen to run into somebody in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And I have to be honest that all the health consequences pale in comparison when you think about some of the negative things associated with not a misdemeanor, but a felony possession charge, where in a lot of states that could be just over an ounce. So, just watch how much you have on hand and be careful where you're getting it. As far as health consequences are concerned, long term, we're seeing some respiratory problems, but not lung cancer, despite what this physician on CNN seems to think. The long-term data do not show increased rates in lung cancer in even daily users in a large study done by Donald Tashkin out in Los Angeles. And it's just not the issue. There is some wheezing and coughing and maybe tightness in the chest that people report in a data set of mine and from other researchers. And the bottom line on this is my usual vaporizer recommendation, mm-hmm. that if you can turn to a vaporizer, by all means, you're going to see a drop in some of these. And a paper of mine, one by Don Abrams, and a couple other publications suggest that really the vaporizer would be the way to sidestep any of these respiratory negative consequences.
Sure.
It's worded in kind of an alarmist way on CNN, but there are some subtle changes in brain function with daily use once you're over about 2 years. And I assume Pat meant, daily, really every single day, not just a couple times a week. And what we do see is just when people are doing really difficult, complicated tasks and have to respond quickly, their brain waves seem to go in a different direction, if you will, than the brain waves of folks who aren't regular cannabis users. But we're talking about a pretty subtle effect here, so I can't make a real big deal out of that. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, just as we're all getting older, baby boomers among us, is some concern about cardiovascular problems. And cannabis does increase heart rate. And there was at least one case of somebody who happened to have a heart attack relatively soon after using cannabis, and they thought maybe the heart rate increase had contributed to that. Unfortunately, from a single case, we just can't really tell. We're not getting tons and tons of evidence about coronary problems in long-term users, particularly those who don't smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
And that was the issue that I thought was neat in the question, is that this person mentions Pat, I guess it's a he or a she, mm-hmm. doesn't use cigarettes. And I think that's a wonderful step toward making sure coronary heart disease is not going to be at risk. When we do see, sort of things that are closely linked to heart problems, it's often in folks who are smoking, dramatically larger amounts than most folks use. One of the studies you mentioned on your blog is an 11 joints a day or more.
Yeah.
clearly, these are folks who are smoking a lot more pot than your average daily user.
Yeah. I often, when I hear these kind of things, and I'm just talking to regular folks, I don't want to get too far into, numbers and studies and science and all that. And if I just want to give them a common sense answer, two things I always say is, number one, inhaling smoke is never good. Smoke of any kind is not necessarily a healthy thing for your lungs. But on the other hand, have you met like older Rastafarians and older hippies? I mean, I would think if there was a severe long-term effect to daily cannabis smoking, we'd see that in some of these heavy cannabis smoking populations, wouldn't you say?
And in fact, it's hard to get those guys to even bother coming into the lab. They don't see any problem. And, you know, I never want to argue from individual cases, but, you know, you look around the normal conference and some of our seniors are there, and they're clearly still having a good time without a lot of health troubles.
Yeah.
The other issue that came up in this CNN report was just the issue of dependence. And
yeah.
Again, I view this as kind of laughable, but there is an established marijuana withdrawal syndrome. And now, if obviously somebody who smoked every day for 25 years probably doesn't know if he or she would have withdrawal if without the cannabis. But the impact of it is really not like our stereotypes of, say, heroin or alcohol or the stimulant drugs. What we do get is, you know, folks who happen to be in the hospital who report cannabis as their drug of choice report some irritability, strange dreams when they sleep, and what a surprise, loss of appetite, as if that is, you know, this big serious withdrawal syndrome. And, you know, as you mentioned, compared to some of the other drugs that are out there, this is pretty minor when you think about what true dependence really means.
Yeah, and there was a few other things that the doctor, by the way, was Dr. Jennifer Hsu from the Children's Medical Group. She's a pediatrician, which right off the bat, I kind of thought that was a little strange to have a pediatrician given, you know, adult and what I guess would be geriatric advice by the time it became long-term, you know, we're talking into your 70s or so. I thought that was odd that she was the one answering, but she mentioned some other things here that I'd like to get your opinion on here. You know, she mentions this THC working on the receptors of the brain and causing hallucinations, learning and memory problems, and how this would be and there was something else about long-term cannabis smokers functioning at a lower intellectual level. And I was just wondering about that.
I think she may have a couple of different studies confused on this. Now, during intoxication, of course,
yeah,
it's really hard to learn new material. I'm not saying it's impossible, but if somebody just said, here's a list of 15 words and you're high, go ahead and learn them, it would be a struggle compared to your performance when you weren't high. The lower intellectual functioning, I'm wondering if she might be referring to good old Peter Fried's data on folks who started using heavy early in life having these small but statistically significant drops in IQ. And I'm always a little suspicious of those because these are the guys who are pretty much getting high every day, and I can't help but wonder if when they come in to take the IQ test, they aren't high as well. Mm. So is it really a chronic effect, or is this really just an acute reaction to cannabis? So I don't want to make too much of that. Obviously, if you feel like, you know, your memory's not going the way you'd like it to go, or you're not at your mental peak, take a few weeks off and enjoy it. And what a surprise, some of your sensitivity will come back, and it could save your pot bill down the line. So, you know, I'm certainly a big fan of, you know, not having to use every day and taking time off. But I feel like the way this is worded, it makes it sound like even in the unintoxicated state, there's some kind of learning deficit.
Right. That's what I was getting at, too, is the way she had constructed the sentence there. You know, at the beginning, she says, in the short term, lower doses can cause feelings of relaxation and sensual distortion. And then she uses a whereas here to talk about what happens under the higher doses. And it kind of shifts the idea that maybe that's a permanent thing rather than just while you're intoxicated. And no one here is trying to argue that there's not mental effects while you're intoxicated.
Exactly. Igor Grant had a great review of all the studies of folks who weren't high at the time, supposedly, and found really small things in learning and memory. And then my student Allison Luby has just shown that some of this may come from really sort of stereotypes about cannabis and how people react to being in the lab if they feel like the lab is kind of an anti-cannabis place.
Sure.
So you can imagine if you come in and it looks like it's mellow and there are, you know, Bob Marley posters on the wall, you might be completely comfortable doing your best. Whereas if you're coming in and everybody's in a white coat and they're, you know, treating you like dirt because you're the cannabis user,
yeah,
then, you know, what a surprise. You don't sort the cards quite as quickly or remember all the crazy paired words.
Do researchers consider that and try to factor out the prohibition of cannabis being a psychological or mental effect on people?
It's intriguing because particularly with the stereotype about paranoid reactions, we're trying to get some data comparing, say, the Netherlands and the U.S. on that. And it's hard, you know, because you're translating and it's different countries and things like that. But generally we see, particularly with some of these more subtle neuropsychological and mental tasks, that people just don't do as well in an environment that's generally hostile anyway. So a colleague of mine who does things on women in the menstrual cycle and their mental functioning across the mental cycle, it's kind of a sexist lab. It's all these butch guys, you know, treating these women crazy. And what a surprise, they don't do particularly well.
Yeah.
And I feel like some of those stereotypes may generalize under these circumstances. And in fact, as soon as we got that paper published, I think we should give a good podcast talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. So bottom line, as we're looking at the long-term effects of regular cannabis use, whether it's daily or weekly, let's say, could we say there's no real effect on longevity or good health in the long term, or is that going too far?
So, well, we don't have the longevity data either way, so
okay.
it's just not there. As far as dependence, well, yeah, if you're using every day, that's consistent with dependence. I'm not sure, how horrible that really is. And then these respiratory irritations are very real, so, by all means, using the vaporizer will help. And again, we don't have data on the cardiovascular stuff, but obviously folks who are, engaging in other good cardiovascular health behaviors, particularly, keeping their cholesterol down, exercising regularly, that sort of thing, we, again, don't have a lot of data. If you've had, some kind of cardiac failure in the past, well, then by all means, don't do this. But
right.
I'm afraid, the list of other drugs, including caffeine and everything else you shouldn't go near, is also pretty expensive.
Well, that's the thing I was thinking of, too, is if you're going to compare the regular use of cannabis to the regular use of anything, and, it goes without saying tobacco or alcohol, but even things like aspirin or caffeine can have long-term health effects that are pretty bad.
You got it. And it's funny because I just read a paper saying that, if everybody would quit caffeine, the rate of stroke would drop by 15%.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of a scary thought for me. And, maybe we should contemplate what are the things that have genuine negative health consequences and consider changes in our behavior. But this just doesn't seem like a high priority one. And unfortunately, we just don't have the data. And as we follow people along, we'll get to know better. But right now, this remains, as judges have said in the past, one of the safest substances around.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Earlywine, thanks for giving us the, the straight dope, we could say, on the cannabis science here. Because when we see those things in CNN, that gets a lot of play. And I think a lot of people react to that, and it's just good to know the real science behind it. Like the doctor mentioned, I've got a post on this that appeared on Monday's Stash with a lot of hyperlinks to some of these studies, so check it out for yourself. Don't take our word for it. It's all right there in black and white from very established peer review research. And again, Mitch, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year.